Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. First time in Bet the Board history, Payne. This is Bet the Board After Dark. Are you ready for the shenanigans and tomfoolery that are bound to ensue?
This is moving hour a little bit, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, it's a little
30 Eastern time. This is nuts. The screen's moving. A couple groups are slamming the board, and it's just flying out of hand right now.
Should we go full disclosure that you've had an adult beverage or two before you record the podcast, or should we keep that off the record?
Absolutely did not.
Oh, okay.
Did not happen.
I'm glad that you maintain a lucid thought process. You're focused on the task at hand, and we'll get down to business. This is essentially our Feast Week podcast. So for those folks new to the Bet the Board brand, college football meets National Football League. You're stuck with myself, Todd Furman, and Payne Insider breaking it all down. No Dave Mason and no Dusty Dvorak to lend us a lifeline, Payne. So we're going to have to carry the torch for the entire Bet the Board brand tonight.
Todd, I got to be honest with you. I've been here 5 years now. I've never heard of Feast Week, so this is new to me as well.
Well, I mean, we try. You try and mix it up. You try and come up with something creative to get us through. But a lot of big games, a handful of college games that we'll get to, some of the marquee matchups for the National Football League, and obviously a special focus being paid on the Thanksgiving Day matchups. But Payne, as we sit here and record on a Tuesday night, earlier today we saw the unveiling of the college football playoff rankings. No surprises when it comes to 1-4, but I think the biggest change in the top 10, we finally see Central Florida jump past a, you know, perennial heavyweight in the form of Ohio State getting into number 9. I don't want to think that they have a chance, but do you want to tell people how many teams in this country would be favored over Central Florida? What are we up to, about 35, 40 maybe?
They don't have a chance. And listen, I wasn't the guy that buried them last week. I was the guy who told you their defense was going to show up and then didn't actually bet the game and profit off of what I said was going to happen. So that really pissed me off. We have them just outside the top 25 right now.
Okay. Well, it's a step in the right direction. I mean, UCF showed well. Big game this weekend. We'll see what happens around them. I want to throw out one potential scenario to you, and I know we talked a little bit about it, but we wanted to flesh it out for about 37 seconds on air. Michigan holds serve. They go 12-1. Notre Dame runs the table. They go 12-0. Clemson wins out. They go 13-0. Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC championship. Who gets left out of the college football playoff?
Who would I leave out, or who's going to actually get left out?
Who do you
out?
Think? Do you think the committee would have the balls to leave Alabama out, saying that they weren't a conference champion? They had the same record as Georgia, who beat them in the head-to-head. Would they leave Alabama out and put them as the number 5 seed?
I don't think so.
So which of those teams? Which of those teams gets?
For me, I mean, Alabama hasn't played anybody.
Well, that's the big issue.
They've just been absolutely dominant. It's Tua. He's going to win the Heisman. This is college sports, so it's a money grab. You're not leaving Alabama out of it. I don't know who you would leave out. It's tough because I don't think you're leaving Notre Dame out. That's a big name brand. But certainly, if we were just looking straight at our power rankings, it's Alabama, Clemson, like I've talked about. Then there's just this precipitous drop, and it's Georgia, Michigan. Those are the four best teams. I'm higher on Notre Dame than most, but I can tell you there's a lot of sophisticated bettors that have Notre Dame power rated actually below both Oklahoma and Ohio State. I'm not one of those guys, but they would be the lesser of those five teams. They would be power rating wise our fifth team in that group.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to think about because there's zero chance if Notre Dame goes on the road and beats USC, finishes with an unblemished record, they get left out. So I think that's the most chaotic circumstance we could root for, to see how the committee elects to handle this, because the potential scenario is, hey, Notre Dame beat Michigan outright early in week one. So you can't
week
have them
when the teams were different.
Exactly, but you can't have them leapfrog, but you leave the Big Ten on the outside looking in, a big brand. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting dilemma and discussion. Obviously, we'll see games play out, not only this weekend, but conference championship. But just something to think about. National Football League, Payne, anything jump out to what you saw over the course of the weekend? Obviously, we had a Monday Night Football treat, highest scoring game in league history. I know you and I are old school. Well, I know you and I are a little old school and wet blankets in the grand scheme of things. I prefer to see a little bit of defense played and not with a losing team scoring 50 points and pushing as a three-point underdog.
Yeah, I agree, and I don't want to be like contrarian guy, but those games aren't for me. Like, I watched a little bit. It was on in the background while I was working. There's just not that, like, down-to-down drama. Like, every play's like this massive gain. I know it's efficient football, but it was pretty sloppy too, right? It was like 7 turnovers, 200 yards of penalties.
The Chiefs had eight. The Chiefs had 8 penalties in the first quarter.
Oof. That's rough. It reminded me, I'm not like a huge video game guy, but I used to be. And like, I got my first Xbox, I was playing Madden, and you start like on rookie level. After an hour of like kind of learning the ropes and the controls and everything, you start beating the computer like 63-0. It's not fun anymore until you go up to like another difficulty level. That was the feeling I had last night watching that game.
Yeah,
and I mean, you know, I'm being 100% truthful because I was texting you and then all of a sudden it went radio silent. I woke up in the morning, I was like passed out the last 5 minutes. The game literally put me to sleep.
Yeah, I get a text at about 4:45 Pacific. I passed out with 3 minutes to go. And most of the time I'd say people were full of shit, but you were pretty spot on to try and do that. Interesting game for a variety of reasons. As a Todd Gurley fantasy owner, I was a little bit bitter. But, hey, tis the nature of the beast, and I think that's unfortunately or fortunately, I guess depending on how you want to look at it, how the league is trending. Now, before we get into some of the games we talk about, and you have a couple contest winners, Payne, I haven't felt this wronged by the city of Minneapolis in years until a jilted ex-girlfriend left me for a current NHL hockey player. But the Gophers letting us down and the Minnesota Vikings looking ill-equipped to do much of anything on the offensive side. 5 red zone trips to 2 for the Bears, and we can't even get a damn push at +3.
5 red zone trips to 2 for the Vikings.
Yeah, that's what I meant. 5 red zone trips to the Vikings, 2 for the Bears.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's rewind this. This is never going to be a hockey podcast, despite what you'll try to.
It's not supposed to be a hockey podcast.
Well, let me finish.
Oh, here we go.
Who's the hockey player?
I don't know if I want to rattle him off. It'd be one thing if you lose a girl to like a first liner or a perennial all-star, but when he's a grinder and like a fourth line guy, used to play for the Wild, now plays for the Islanders. Anyone wants to dig into it, they're welcome to, and tweet at me and I'll let you know if you're right. But, you know, it's a little blow to the ego.
So he's like Carl Racky kind of guy?
Carl Racky. It's a little bit of a blow to the ego for Todd Furman in his mid-20s when that happens, and that's kind of how I felt with the Gophers performance against Northwestern and
quickly transitioning
the Minnesota. Oh, I'm transitioning out of that. Hey, I brought it up and I'm closing the book on it real fast. I just wanted to try and create a little perspective since, you know, we suffer as much as the listeners do when we bet these games and come up on the wrong side of decisions.
Yeah, well, so the Gophers, just an annoying game, right? You beat the market by 6 points. You're hoping for a win. It was the wrong side. Let's just put it that way.
Although yeah,
it's
I agree.
One of those. Yeah, it's one of those just like annoying things that's recently been happening. It's part of this like 3-4 week slide that we've been on. You get situations where like you can't convert 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, those things, and the opponent's converting like 3rd and 8. That was kind of the gist of that game. Like Minnesota was getting in plus territory, had 3rd and shorts, couldn't convert, missing 30-yard field goals, have 4th and 1. None of the momentum plays we're getting right now. That's kind of what it seems to be, right? You can't pick up 4th and 1. You're going to get a stop. It's still a 6-point game. 3rd and 8, Northwestern picks up 75. It just completely turns the game, right? And the same thing. You're down 6. You're in plus territory. You have a 3rd and 1. You can't convert. Then you miss the 30-yard field goal, and all the momentum zapped. I didn't really – PJ Flex is going to be a good coach. He's got no talent there. He's going to eventually get it. I don't like what they're doing. Like, it's – I get it. It's cold. It's Minnesota. Like, you're going to play physical football, but – if you want to run the ball on 3rd and short these days, the metrics are all there. The success rate metrics are all there. You want to spread teams out when you're running. You don't want to bring in a 2 tight ends and a fullback and just alert the entire world you're running right up the middle. And that's kind of what Minnesota did multiple times there in 3rd and 4th and short.
What? You mean you don't like running a quarterback read option on 3rd and 1 when your quarterback hasn't kept it all game and everybody in the building and who watched the game, I think all 15,000 Bet the Board listeners and nobody else, friends and family, go, all right, we know what's going to happen. He's going to hand it off and he's going to get stacked up in the box.
The read option without the read or the option. That's basically what was being run there. NFL was a little different. I know it's a game we'll talk about, but man, is Trubisky bad right now? Zimmer blew that game a little bit. I didn't love what he was doing defensively, especially with his corners. There was a lot of situations where, you know, he's got Xavier Rhodes playing off. Like, if your number one corner can't stick a number three or number four, like, that's just a recipe for disaster. Like, you got to play press man, and you can't just leave Trubisky's first option wide open. And Trubisky's still missing a lot of his first options with bad passes, and they're just great catches. But that was part of it. And then you alluded to it. The five. If I told you before the game, you can take three with the team getting five red zone trips, or you can lay three with the team getting two red zone trips. You know, you're taking Minnesota every time. And just costly turnovers. Both teams had three turnovers each. Ours are Cook's turnover in the red zone and a pick six, and theirs were in midfield. So that's basically what it came down to. Still had an opportunity there for a push late with the two-point conversion. Didn't get it. And any, I think, permutation of the twos that went differently that night would have caused a push or a cover.
Yeah, natural sequence of events, as everybody in this business who's done it long enough, you go through stretches and it feels like it's never going to end. It takes one bounce and all of a sudden we're back on track. But like we always say around here, we don't hide our losses. We don't pound our chest when we win. It's just the nature of the business, and we'll continue to grind forward. But not to be completely negative, you have a couple winners in front of you, not only for our Bet the Board iTunes contest, but I think some other stuff we've had going on.
Well, two things, not to get all sappy, but I think all our listeners kind of know what we've done for years, and we appreciate it, because usually you'll see like a massive drop-off. Podcasts will see that, you know, when you can't win a few games. Our listenership is still steady, so we're thankful for that, so we appreciate that, and that's why we have contest giveaways. We have two of them, right? We talked about this. The iTunes giveaway winner, they'll get a Visa gift card and some Bet the Board gear. That will go to Thunder Dan 22. So congrats to him.
Appreciate Dan Majerly, the 5-star review. Phoenix Suns fame and current head coach of Grand Canyon University, listening to the podcast.
Thunder Dan, baby.
All right.
That's the iTunes winner. We'll do it again, obviously, in a couple weeks. So leave the 5-star review. Leave a nice little sentence. You're automatically entered into this contest running, and we'll throw it into a simulator. Hit enter, and up pops a name, and that's how it goes. So Thunder Dan 22 is the winner for that. And then the NFL week 10? NFL week?
No, I think that was week 11, I think it was.
It is. You're right. Week 11. Time flies. NFL week 11 contest winner, L. Moise 20. So congrats to him. Went 5-0, and it came down to the Monday Night Football total as the tiebreaker. He had 71 points. Next guy had 70, so L. Moise 20 wins on the tiebreaker for Monday Night Football.
71. You guys weren't anywhere close. I mean, you should have been in 101 to try and get you to the window. But congratulations, and to echo your sentiments, Payne. I mean, we do this all for the listeners, so we've taught them well enough, and we appreciate the feedback that you guys know what we're all about. And that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes. Want to give you guys the tools and cultivate that thought process to make you long-term winners, not just spoon-feed you picks like some of the competition out there. But we do have some games to get to, Payne, and I know the first 15 minutes will make everyone feel warm and tingly as they head out on the road for their holiday commutes. But let's get into the college card, and we'll start with a game Friday night in frosty Morgantown, West Virginia, where it's Oklahoma, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 83.5. This is only the Sooners' fourth true road game. They've gone to Lubbock. They've gone to Fort Worth to take on TCU. Ames against Iowa State. And when I look at this statistical profile, Payne, no reason to believe that this couldn't be a continuation of the offensive fireworks we saw Monday night between the Rams and Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I was about to say, we've already seen this game, right? Monday night in Los Angeles. I don't know who gets to stop Oklahoma's last three games, 97, 95, and 95. Like, they gave up 8.2 yards a play to Kansas at home. 9.7 yards a run.
That's hard to do.
It's very difficult. There was like that initial two-game surge defensively after firing Stoops. Like, that's a distant memory right now.
They play. Hold on a second. That two-game surge, and they play like Kansas State as one of those two games. There's asterisks by that. Ruffin McNeil didn't do anything different. The schedule helped them out, and that's the only reason they looked to have a competent defense.
I agree, but they had the bye. You get the initial hoorah after the firing, right? It was basically the players that removed Stoops from that position, so you know they were going all out. But yes, competition certainly a big factor in that. This one, it's going to come down to like what we talked about on Monday Night Football. Who can hold to that field goal? Who can kind of prevent once you get into that scoring territory. Maybe you create a turnover. The problem is both defenses are outside the top 100 in that category. So when opponents are getting in the green zone, both Oklahoma and West Virginia's defense allow roughly 5 points per trip inside the 40. So maybe it is a turnover thing, right? Who can create that play that changes and steals a possession maybe for your offense? That can go a long ways. Oklahoma doesn't turn anybody over. Like, there is just not a lot of talent on that side of the ball. So when I was looking at that, they're 128th in the country in takeaways. West Virginia is 11th. Maybe that's kind of the difference to create that extra possession or two. Expect points. It's 35 degrees, but there is no wind. There's no weather to speak of. It's why that total is sailing over right now. Opened 81. We've seen real professional money on the over. And I know, like, databases aren't going to go that high. It's similar to Monday night. Like, our database doesn't go to like 63 right now, but it did spit out like the highest total. So that's something to build off of. And I it's going to make me puke to say this, but 81 was a little short. This is what it's become in 2018.
We should see plenty of offensive fireworks for sure. You mentioned some of the defensive issues. Red zone defense, Oklahoma, 128 in the country. West Virginia slightly better, 95. Third down conversions, Oklahoma elite, where West Virginia checks in the middle of the pack. I'll ask you one last question on this game, Payne. If you have to trust one of these two quarterbacks to make a play late, you going to give the nod to Kyler Murray on the road, or are you going to trust Will Greer to find one of his talented wide receivers?
Ooh, that's a good question. I like Kyler Murray's legs. I think that would be the deciding factor, is Kyler Murray's legs. Now, he can be baited. That's the one thing that we've seen with him. Not the best at reading defenses quite yet. You can bait him into some turnovers, but he's, you know, the games that he's turned the ball over early, he's really rebounded. I think that extra element of having your legs is probably the deciding factor for me siding with Kyler Murray. Now, I do think West Virginia's defense is maybe just a touch better, if that's possible, and they've been better at home.
Yeah, I mean, saying they're a touch better, though, is picking... I'm trying to think of an analogy, and it's going to elude me right now, so I'm not even going to try and go down that path.
I could say something, but it's very offensive, and you're not allowed to say that word anymore. So
no, I mean... I know this is Bet the Board after dark, but there still are some repercussions for our action. One thing I will say about watching the Oklahoma-Kansas game in spurts, it's always good when they put a graphic up and they show that the head coach, Lincoln Riley, making $4.8 million, and his starting quarterback is making $4.6 million. The only programs I know that pay their players quite that well, albeit it's coming from Oakland, are the Duke Blue Devils and the Kentucky Wildcats in college basketball. But I digress.
I was going to ask you about that. I don't know why I don't know this, and it's really not that important, so I've never cared to look it up, but it's just hitting me right now. He's not allowed to cash that check. I don't know
exactly how it works, because I think if you get paid in a different sport, you don't compromise your amateur status. Now, I know it's not apples to apples, but a similar thing happened with, I want to say, the wide receiver Jeremy Bloom at Colorado. He was getting paid in endorsement deals as an Olympic skier, but he still maintained his amateur eligibility as a football player. Now that we know the Bloom family story, he had enough money under the table from his sister and the card games that they were running. But... At the same time, I don't know exactly how it works. So if any of our listeners know, that'd be great to kind of tweet at us and let us know how Kyler maintains his amateur status.
There you go.
So it's a pretty big check to be sitting around for $4.6 million in guaranteed money coming from the Oakland A's. All right, into the game in the Palouse, where it's Washington State, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 49.5. And Payne, since we got on here, we've seen a steady flow of under money that started trickling in earlier in the week. We've seen a steady flow of dog money. And I just want to put this series in perspective for those folks that aren't all that familiar with Pac-12 football. Washington has won 5 straight here. They've covered 4 out of the last 5. This will be the first time Washington State is favored in the Apple Cup since 2006 and only the 8th time since 1990. I'll make the claim that this is the most on the line for Washington State since 1997, when Ryan Leaf was their starting quarterback. And we look at the last 5 years, Washington has won every game by 10 points or more. 4 of those 5 games have been decided by 18 points or more. So I give you that to ask you this. Is this the year Washington State finally has the firepower offensively to put pressure on the Huskies' defense, and do they have enough to slow down the explosive ground game that Myles Gaskin and Washington's going to throw at them?
It's possible. There you go. No, I'm kidding.
All right.
This is a tough game, right? Like, there's a reason this number's coming down, right? There isn't like a respected numbers guy that ever had Wazoo favored by 3.5 here. So it's a little different handicap now that you're at 2.5. And as I alluded to when we first got on this podcast, there's a group that currently likes to pepper the market on Tuesday nights, and they were still grabbing Washington +3. So it's basically a matter of making a case for Washington at 2.5. I don't know. You've kind of hit the two, I think, key points, key matchups in this game. The first one is the Washington secondary against Minshew. You watch more Pac-12 football than I have, obviously being out west full-time. The three games where Washington has faced a somewhat competent passing attack, and I think someone would debate the first one, would be Auburn. They allowed 72% of passes to be completed, lost that game. Oregon, NFL quarterback, they didn't really do much. They still hung 30. They won, I think, because Oregon basically did a very good job winning that trench battle. And then you had Stanford and KJ Costello. Washington did pick Costello off 3 times, but they also allowed him to complete 67% of passes for like 350 yards. When I dug into this a little bit, there's a lot of attrition on the defensive side of the ball for Washington. They've had 7 defensive starters drafted, 3 in the secondary the last 2 years. My eyes tell me this isn't as good of a secondary as people believe. And like the Pac-12 is really down right now. There's really not a lot of good passing attacks Washington's face. They haven't been tested. They do a really good job of like negating explosive passes. That's not how Wazoo beats you through the air. If you look at what Wazoo does, it's like they stay ahead of the chains. It's efficient down to down. And you look at Washington, they've faced a schedule that's barely top 60, but they're 111th in the country in completion rate defense. They've allowed opposing quarterbacks to complete over 63% of their passes. They get zero pressure on the quarterback either. So I think that's a big thing. What was the other one you mentioned? Gaskin on the ground. I think has to be... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to agree with all the points you made. I definitely watch, and sometimes, you know, the metrics say one thing and the eye test tells you something different. There's right. No Buda Baker. There's no Sidney Jones. There's no Vita Vea on this Washington defense to give them the disruptive forces that they've had in recent years. And that's really been the bane of Washington State's existence. When you don't have NFL caliber wide receivers, you play press man coverage, you're able to disrupt the flow and get pressure. I just don't see that recipe and those players on the roster, but I'll let you hit on Washington's offense as well.
Well, I think you're spot on, right? I think Chris Peterson knows that. That's why he plays them back, and that's why they're giving up all the completion short. It'll be interesting to see if that recipe changes because, again, Wazoo isn't overly explosive through the air. It's more of efficient. The other matchup you talk about is Washington and their ability to run the ball, and I think that probably is going to determine who wins this game. Right. And I think it becomes a bigger factor. And you mentioned this total coming down, and it's coming down because there's an 80% chance of rain and 15-mile-per-hour winds at kick. So the ground game is going to have even more of an importance here. And you look at what Wazoo does defensively. We've talked about it. Surprised how good they were and are right now, despite losing Alex Grinch. I thought this was going to be a defense that just absolutely collapsed. They've been steady. Their weakness is on the ground, right? They're 91st in rushing efficiency defense. They're 80th in explosive run defense. I'm not sure Wazoo can take the ground game away. That would be the goal here, obviously, force Browning to beat them with the 15-mile-per-hour winds. We've talked about Browning. He's got a pea shooter for an arm. So they're going to have to take away Gaskins in this game. You read some of the quotes this week. He's a senior. He knows it hasn't been a great season. He wants to go out on a high note. So I think Gaskins probably has a pretty good game here.
Yeah, and you talk about some of the quotes. Jake Browning looking to try and be the first Washington quarterback to win 4 Apple Cups. His comment, I think we've been able to run the ball every single year. I don't totally remember all the games, to be honest, but most of the times we do well on offense, it's because we've been executing well and be able to get explosives. Those are probably the main keys. I just haven't seen that from Washington, and this is a Huskies team when they go out on the road. They haven't covered a game since September 15th against Utah when they shut down the Utes to a 21-7 victory. Some real skepticism here. I know the side the professional money is going to come in on. I'm just not sure I can buy into what we've seen history repeating itself. So should be a good game.
Certainly a different ball game, right? Certainly a different ball game when you can take 3.5 versus 2.5. And I think that's what we, you know, you just watched Monday Night Football. Could have took 3.5 on KC, lands 3. We learned that on Thursday Night Football. Professionals got out ahead, laid the 2.5 on Seattle. It lands 3. Everyone else pushes. That is the difference. I'm just telling you, that is the difference between becoming a professional better and not being able to profit long term. That's, you know, 2-3, 3.5% difference right there in some of those numbers.
It's amazing how that works out, especially around key numbers in a game like this, where judging by the movement we've seen on the total, points could be at a premium. Should be a great game on Saturday night, setting up what is probably the crown jewel of the slate on Saturday. When we look at Ohio State and Michigan, and it's Michigan right now, 5-point favorite at betonline.ag, paying total in this game 56.5. Michigan, over the last 14 games against Ohio State, they've put together a robust 1-13 record, but history will be made at the Horseshoe on Saturday. A streak of 51 straight games for the Scarlet and Gray will come to an end. That's how many times Ohio State has been installed as a favorite. When I look at this game, Payne, you and I have probably watched these teams more than almost anybody in the country, more than any other teams in the country, I should say. Can Michigan find the explosive running plays against this very vulnerable Ohio State defense? I mean, Maryland laid a blueprint, but I'll make the case that Maryland has more explosive playmakers in their backfield than Michigan, led by Kerryon Higdon and his 100-plus per game rushing average.
McFarland's a beast. He's going to be damn good. Man, it's a pretty electric freshman. They had Leak, too, who went down with an injury in the Indiana game, and he was just gliding out there. So they got some speed there. It's really interesting. You know, after the preview podcast and like 12 weeks of college content, I think you know our feelings about these two teams, right? You know how to beat and attack Ohio State's defense. It's with the explosion, like you just alluded to. The Buckeyes are just young defensively. They're out of position a lot. They lose their gap integrity frequently. And I think because of that, right, the speed kills them. Once that speed finds the vulnerability, like it's off to the races, it's a big play. You look last week, Ohio State gave up 8.6 yards per play to Maryland last week. That's just nuts. Buckeyes defense, 125th in explosive run D, 102nd in explosive pass defense. Maybe Michigan offensively is going to go and try to locate Tarik Black. Maybe he's a factor. He's been kind of easing his way back from the broken foot the last few weeks. It's possible he's going to contribute a little bit more here. Maybe he can hit a big play through the air. But in general, like this is kind of a plodding Michigan offense. It's extremely efficient down to down. You're looking at them offensively. They're successful in 47% of offensive snaps. That's 22nd in the country. They're 7th in passing efficiency. You know, Shea Patterson's really grasping this offense. He has a feel for his new teammates. I think this will be interesting here, though, to see if Michigan can go on those long, sustained drives. It might be tougher than we think. Although, you know, again, looking at some of these numbers, you can still run on Ohio State a little bit, even if it isn't explosive. They can be pushed around a little bit in the trenches, but this is going to be a game where their ball's to the wall. This would be the spot where you'd think they could buy in, right? Maybe there's a little added motivation seeing UCF jump them. And the reality is, I think if they can beat Michigan and then you win a Big Ten championship, you know, there's possibilities that you may be able to slide in there if someone does lose.
What do we look at on the other side of the ball with Ohio State's offense that, led by Dwayne Haskins, he's put together a tremendous season under center for them. But one of the bugaboos for the Buckeyes had been their inability to run the football. However, over the last three games, it includes Maryland and Nebraska, not exactly defensive heavyweights. They've run for 600-plus rushing yards. Ohio State's still failing to cover numbers. I think they're 1-6 against the spread their last seven. When we look at Michigan, we know that this team is about as elite as it comes defensively, especially by Big Ten standards, number one across the board and a lot of the most important metrics. But this will be the most potent offense they face. Do you see any opportunities for Ohio State to exploit what Michigan does best?
Yeah, I've kind of hit on this a little bit. Like, I liked the offense better for Ohio State when Ryan Day was in charge. It had that big play element to it. It was more vertical. With Urban, we know his offense is by now. It's just this side-to-side stuff. It's been his entire life, right? He's had Alex Smith. He's had Tim Tebow. Like, it's just side-to-side. The ground game, I think, I know you mentioned the last two games, but those are against teams that cannot stop the run. It's been disappointing this year for Ohio State on the ground. Like, J.K. Dobbins has zero burst, zero explosiveness. He's had trouble with his vision following lead blockers. Like, Ohio State fans know exactly what I'm talking about right now. It's been a discussion recently. Either way, though, like, you're not running consistently on Michigan. They're top 20 in all the run-stopping categories, from efficiency to explosiveness to stuff rate. The Wolverine secondary, that's elite, too. They've allowed opposing quarterbacks to complete just 47% of their passes on the season. That's just absolutely nuts. It's number one in the country. So, like, Ohio State's going to have to figure out how to crack this code. To me, something is missing from Ohio State. Like, the talent's there. It's just odd. Like, even the receivers. Like, you have Parrish Campbell and, like, you know, you have Hill. Like, they're both upperclassmen. Neither of those receivers feels like complete guys. Like, I don't really love him. The ground game has no burst. Haskins, like, isn't quite as mobile as I thought he was. He's averaging, like, 3.7 carry. Like, it's just, it's an odd team right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, but it feels like we saw this from Ohio State last year. They had the most talent every week they went out there, and it was just that intangible element was lacking. It's not the five-star recruits and how they look getting off the bus, but the execution in-game, the ability to have that killer instinct. It's just something's not there, and it's so hard to try and quantify, but we have seen it quantified in their inability to cover numbers with the continued respect in the market. Very curious to see where this number ultimately settles. As we mentioned, very real professional money coming in on Michigan, even laying the four. Keep in mind, look ahead number on this game was 3.5, and I saw a lot of prominent shops open 3 heading into this week. So we'll see. I think you're going to see pretty balanced action from the public. Unfortunately, I have some stats from. Yeah, it is a good number. And we have some stats from Dave Mason. He's not here to deliver them, but we'll dole out some of those nuggets. However, Payne, normally, you know, we close up shop. We did college football. We say our goodbyes. We give our best bet. We still got a lot of work to do. We got some National Football League, and this will kick off even earlier on Thanksgiving. So we may as well get down to a little bit of brass tacks in the pro ranks. And, of course, the big question Thursday in the Motor City is, will he or won't he? He, of course, being Mitchell Trubisky. And right now, BetOnline has the Bears, a 3-point road favorite. We'll call it a little bit of a hybrid number here. Total in this game, 44.5, juice to the under. Spoke to my guys in Chicago. They don't think Trubisky's going to go. I always love when a coach comes out. He says, yeah, our quarterback's not going to need surgery. He's day-to-day. Something tells me with Trubisky not practicing today, he is a long shot to be under center for the Monsters of the Midway.
Yeah, and four got gobbled up there.
Real fast.
I don't know what the downgrade is here. I'll be nice and maybe call it two. I mean, I'm not a Trubisky guy at this very moment. Like, Matt Nagy is a genius. Like, he deserves a medal for what he's done with this Bears offense. Trubisky right now is like just this one read quarterback. If the first read isn't there and it's not open, it's use your legs and pray for Mitchell Trubisky. And this is certainly an offense that or a defense you're going against that you could have some success against, I would think. When I look at this game, one, I think four is certainly a tall number. But Kerryon Johnson looks like he's potentially out. Marvin Jones looks like he's potentially out. Like, I think those two are long shots. I'd like to have those offensive pieces there. If you're the Lions offense, you have to use tempo here. Like, the game plan for every single team facing the Bears defense should be to use tempo and tire out that front four and pass rush. It works. We saw when the Vikings went tempo, it helped their struggling offensive line because those big dudes up front have about 2-3 high-end snaps in them before the fatigue sets in. And you force them to stay on the field. Like, this is a tool Belichick's used for years. He goes tempo and passing early to tire out the pass rushers, not just like in those series. But if you can't get off the field, it has this lasting impact. And you see this all the time, and we saw it again this past week. There's just this dramatic drop-off in pass rush ability late in the third quarter and the fourth quarter when you do this. And so a lot of, I know, Bears fans will be like, oh, we changed our defense. If you watch the All-22, you did not change a thing defensively. What ended up happening was the Vikings decided they were behind two scores and needed to go tempo. And after about two pass rushes, the defensive line was gassed and couldn't get to the quarterback. And here you go. Kirk Cousins is making plays. That needs to be the like from the onset for this Lions offense, right? Get them going, use tempo, short passes. That's how you want to attack the Bears defense. The secondary, the one spot they're vulnerable is like they're like 12th in the league right now in passing success rate defense. They don't allow big plays, but you can move the ball a little bit on them. So that's got to be the key here. Use tempo, get the short pass game going for Detroit, and maybe that's the way to attack the Chicago defense.
One last thing on this campaign. We look at the quick turnaround for the Bears. No idea how the NFL lets this happen. I know they flex games and they want marquee matches, but you shouldn't have to play a Sunday night football game and then play early on Thursday. That's borderline ridiculous, and not having a dog in the fight or being a fan, I just think it's unfair to the Bears. When I look at the last meeting between these two teams, how much does that factor in? I mean, the Bears more or less dominated Soldier Field. They were up 34-10. I mean, when you look at yards per play metrics, the Bears 7.6 to 4.2 for the Lions. Do we think revenge revenge plays an element here or a level of familiarity? I'm always curious how your thought process and how you should try and factor that in with these two teams playing essentially twice in the span of, what, 17 days, if that, 10 days.
Yeah, certainly when you get embarrassed and you get a quick turnaround, you like that angle a little bit, and certainly Detroit has an advantage here. Having played a Sunday afternoon game at home, they get that extra day, right? I know the travel isn't very far, but Chicago effectively plays the night game. By the time that game's over, like, they're not even thinking about Detroit until maybe Monday morning, Monday afternoon. Then you have your travel day. This is a tough spot for Chicago. It really is. Advantage to the home team on Thursdays. I think that even gets intensified when you talk about Sunday night to Thursday noon turnaround.
Yeah, it's just bizarre that it happens. I do have to give the league a little credit. For whatever reason, the Cowboys always get to play not only the Thursday of Thanksgiving, they get to play the subsequent Thursday against the Saints, so that's on normal rest. But we'll see how the Bears handle it. Of course, a season-defining win for them holding serve against the Vikings. And owning sole possession of first place in the AFC North after Week 11 for the first time, I believe, since 2006. From the North to the NFC East, and it's the Washington Redskins on the road in Dallas, finding themselves a 7.5-point underdogs. Total in this game, 40.5. And, of course, the big story here, Washington, the gruesome injury to Alex Smith, sidelining him for the season. You wish him a healthy and speedy recovery. Colt McCoy comes in relief. He beat the Cowboys, what feels like an eternity ago, back in 2014. What kind of adjustment do you make to the overall power profile for the Redskins, given Alex Smith and his underperformance to Colt McCoy?
You know, numerically, I think you have to assess just like a little drop off, a very small one, maybe 2 points. I mean, Alex Smith, he was bad this season. And you have McCoy, he's been in Gruden's system, I think, since 2014. So I think that helps. The other angle here is this is the second time they've played Dallas. So the familiarity and the prep work went into the first matchup a few weeks ago. You know, Colt McCoy is going to be motivated here, right? This is a week that he's probably going to put in a little extra time. He's probably going to be more prepared than most quarterbacks this week because he's heading back home to Texas against the Cowboys. And you talk to and listen to a lot of these players for the Redskins, and they've come out and said, like, hey, even though he's a backup, he prepares more than just about anybody in this building. So I think that's a positive. They're not doing any live game reps in practice this week. Like, it's basically just all walkthroughs for Gruden. So maybe, you know, if you can get past the initial game flow early on, like without some mistakes, that'll go a long way. So you're just hoping the live bullets don't really hinder him too much. Now, I know he got some action in live bullets against Houston, but I was listening to his press conference today and he was mentioning that about potentially starting a little slow, that he wanted to see and get adjusted to game speed since they were only doing walkthroughs this week.
Yeah, I mean, you figure that Washington, they know the recipe for Dallas' success. The numbers don't lie. The Cowboys, since drafting Ezekiel Elliott, 14-0 when Elliott has 140-plus yards from scrimmage, 10-11 when he doesn't. I mean, the numbers kind of, I mean, what he's put up the last couple weeks, averaging almost 5 yards per carry, the best of his career through the first 10 games, 388 scrimmage yards the last two games, leads the league, obviously contributing to outright wins on the road against Philadelphia and Atlanta. Well, I do want to ask you, though, about the Cowboys' pain. Is it possible, and you hate to extrapolate and try and fabricate a case being made for the underdog, that this could be a letdown for Dallas, even at home, national spotlight in Thanksgiving, off of two big road wins and knowing they have a date looming a week from now with the Saints?
Well, it's amazing how we talk about spots all the time. It's why the math guys laugh at us about the spots, right? Because if you could have flipped the scenario, if Washington had won last week and Dallas had lost, this is an all-in spot for Dallas, right? I don't think this is a time where Dallas is just going to throw away games. Like, I just don't see that happening, right? This is for the division lead, effectively. You now see a Washington team without its starting quarterback, and it's kind of like sharks seeing blood in the water kind of thing. That's how it should be, right? This is a division game. This is a must win. They're coming off the bye from 3 weeks ago, so they've only played two games since the bye. They should be plenty refreshed. You nailed it. The key for them is just to keep doing what you've done the last 2 weeks. I think it's really simple. Like, you don't really want to make it sound so elementary, but it really is. Like, just get Zeke the ball. That's it. Get it to him on the ground. You're looking at the Redskins defense. They're 24th in the league. They allow 50% of runs to grade successful. They're well below average in explosive runs. This short week here, you'd think the trench guys, those are the guys that probably feel it a little bit more these short weeks. So it's even more important to get Zeke the ball, get him going. I like what they're doing. It seems like the offense, and I know last week the scoreboard didn't indicate that they were overly explosive, but if you look at a lot of the success rate metrics, the Cowboys were very good. It's just kind of once they got into plus territory, they started to stall out just a little bit. But they're doing smarter things. Like, they're getting Zeke the ball in different areas. Like, he's got 17 receptions the last three games. The Redskins have allowed the fourth most receptions to running backs this season. So I think you got to keep getting him the ball as much as possible. That's efficient. And I think it helps in other areas. I think this is kind of those things where you're like, hey, at this point in the season, Zeke's so valuable. Like, just get him the ball 35 times because it's efficient on the field. But maybe it tires him out and he's not hanging out at the nightclubs all the time. Maybe that'll help too.
Where do you ultimately think this number goes? I mean, you think the hooks disappear and with such a low total that it puts a premium on being able to grab over one possession?
I do. I think the hooks eventually disappear here. There was a slight touch of professional money at 7.5. I think Washington's a little bit of a fraud. I really do. But the one thing that stood out to me here when I was looking at this, I do feel like Colt McCoy could have some success here. I really do. I think he's going to get some help too. If you looked, and I listened to Gruden's presser this afternoon, he said he's optimistic that left tackle Trent Williams plays. So I think that's big. The other thing is, like, Dallas defensively is struggling a little bit against the pass. They're 26th in the NFL. They allow 49% of passes to grade successful. And while the drop-off isn't as much as it's been in recent years, and Vander Esch is fantastic, what they're doing on passing downs before when Sean Lee was in there, you had both Vander Esch and Sean Lee in there. Now it's Jalen Smith, and Jalen Smith, like, he's rebound, like, he's been good recently. He's been good this season. He's rebounded off the injury. He's having one of his best seasons, having his best season. But he struggles a little bit against the pass. And so I was looking at this. On weeks that Sean Lee has played, Dallas allows 43% of passes to grade successful. Without Sean Lee, that number goes up to 55%. So he's actually been missed when it comes to the pass game. So maybe Colt McCoy will have some success here. It still doesn't sound like Jamison Crowder or Chris Thompson are trending towards playing. Those guys would have been huge to get back.
Yeah, should be a game where you could see every possession, meaning a lot more than it will in the nightcap. Where we go from the NFC East to the NFC South, and arguably the South's bitterest NFL rivalry, where the underdog has covered in 5 of 7, but uncharted territory for a number this large, and it's the Saints laying 13 against the Atlanta Falcons. Total in this game, paying 60 at betonline.ag. And I guess the first thing, and it's going to sound like a simple question, but it's one every defensive coordinator has to ask, how do you go about stopping or at least slowing down the New Orleans Saints, who in 5 straight games have gone for 100-plus rushing yards, 3 straight 300-yard passing games? And in the first meeting between these teams, a game we were on and gave out in this podcast with the Saints, 143 on the ground and almost 400 yards passing against this Falcons defense.
Yeah, it's a bad question. Like, it's not going to happen, right? This is all about Atlanta trying to keep pace. Like, nothing else matters. The Falcons defense doesn't have a prayer here. Like, Dan Quinn has the worst defense in the NFL. It's dead last in efficiency, and they've played a middling schedule of offenses. Deion Jones, I kind of hinted last week. Everyone thought he was going to play. I was kind of down. You're like, hey, like, this might not be it this week. And again, he's been limited. It's a lower body injury. He's not in game shape. Even if he does play, it's going to be a limited snap count. They're talking about him potentially playing. Like, it's a short week. I don't know. And if he does play, I don't know how impactful it's going to be. This is solely up to Matt Ryan and the Falcons offense to put up points here. I think they're capable of that. They need to get back to executing in the red zone. They did an awesome job of turning red zone trips into touchdowns from like week 2 through 10. They struggled there last week a little bit. Field goals are no good here. I think you can attack the Saints through the air. We've talked about this a little bit. Atlanta's got capable weapons to do that. Atlanta can't really run the football. Gotten a little better the last few weeks, but you're thinking it's a one-dimensional offense. Like, that's how you gotta think in this, right? Because they can't run the ball very well, and the Saints don't let you run. So this is all about Matt Ryan. It's all about those receivers. You got to keep Matt Ryan clean, I think. I looked at this earlier. He's been pressured on 30% of his dropbacks. It's about 4% better than league average, so I think that's a positive. When Matt Ryan doesn't have pressure, he is going to torch you. He's completing 77% of his passes. Only Mahomes and the other guys on the other side of the sidelines this week, Breeze, are better with time in the pocket. So if Matt Ryan stays clean and they can convert some red zone trips, I think you got a shot here, you know?
Can the Falcons do that against what's looked to be, to my untrained eye, a rapidly improving New Orleans defense, starting to resemble the form we saw last year when you were on them before anybody, saying, hey, don't undersell this defense. It's a lot better than they're getting credit for.
They're starting to trend upwards the last 4 weeks. That's a good untrained eye you have there. It's been much better. Right now, I was looking earlier today, they're 15th in passing success rate defense. Over the last, I think it was 4 weeks, I was looking at their season long rank is 27th, so it's a step up, and that has the Rams game in there, that four game sample. So it looks like Lattimore's playing better. He got his first pick of the season. The addition of Eli Apple, I think, has helped some. I think it also helps, right? The offense has been so good, they're facing one dimensional offenses, so I think that plays a part as well. But if this team gets going and they have home field advantage throughout, that crowd, the dome, the offense is going to get them in positions to face one-dimensional offenses. The defensive line does a very good job stopping the run. I think the secondary is only going to continue to improve.
Yeah, I mean, it's simply incredible what New Orleans is doing, and they've obviously been rewarding those that have put blind faith in them. 8 straight covers for New Orleans so far this season, their last 43 games overall, 28-15 against the number, and the last 33 times they've tangled with an NFC opponent, 23-10. So little to say they have not disappointed the pay window, and part of the reason to look ahead for this game, New Orleans was a 10.5-point favorite. We've seen it out to 13. Any chance you think that this number could get to 2 full touchdowns once the public gets involved with their bellies full of turkey on Thanksgiving?
This is the one weekend where the public really has their say. And so if you're a dog player, generally speaking, obviously not every game is going to fall like this, but generally speaking, this is the weekend where you want to wait for your dogs, because the public is out in full force. They're betting their favorites. And you can just kind of look at this game, how it's trending right now. Some of the sharpest shops in the world are sitting at 12. Some of the public shops sitting at 13, 13 and a half. I don't know if we get to 14. I think that would certainly be a buy price on Atlanta with a capable offense inside a dome, right? This isn't your typical road game for Atlanta. This isn't, you know, outdoors in Ohio, 35-degree weather. They're in the dome. They've been there before. It's a familiar opponent. I think they can score enough points here if it got to 14.
Should be a fun game to close things out on Thanksgiving. And then, of course, we have to wait about 48 hours before things kick off on Sunday. Not the most attractive slate, but one game that may fly under the radar for a team that is going to look to try and get back on track in the form of the Carolina Panthers. They're 3-point home favorites, or I should say, 3.5-point home favorites at betonline.ag. Total in this game of 47. Seattle makes the cross-country trip. And I don't want to oversimplify it for the Panthers, but it almost looks too easy. This team's 5-0 straight up at home, 4-1 against the spread. They've won 15 out of their last 21 games in their own building, and they've scored 30 points or more in their last 4 home games. Can they get the ground game on track at home against the Seahawks, something that they haven't been able to do in losses the last 2 weeks at the Lions, 56 yards on the ground, and the week before against the Steelers, where they were absolutely embarrassed in prime time and only amassed 95 in the pedestrian variety?
I'll be honest, this Panthers team has been a thorn in the side of pro bettors for a couple years now. They always seem to zig when they're supposed to zag and vice versa. It's just a really annoying team. They took a little money so far this week. Offensively for them, you know, Seattle's trending poorly defensively. I dug into that a little bit. It's who they've played, right? They played the Chargers, Rams, and Packers, 3 Hall of Fame quarterbacks the last 3 games. Like, you're going to regress a little bit on that side of the ball. You can run on Seattle, and I think that's the key in this game. Seattle's defense, 23rd in rushing success rate, 22nd in passing success rate. They have faced a tough slate of opposing offenses, 4th toughest schedule of offenses, but it comes down to this ground game. And I think Carolina can move the ball, whether it's – they've been doing some nice stuff, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, some tricky stuff. Got a couple running backs going. Maybe you get good Cam going early. That's again, always the key. Get Cam going early. And you're going to have some success. This game, I think, is all about who can establish the ground game. to me. I know we're coming off the Monday Night Football game. It's 2018. It's all about the pass. But both these teams like to run. Seattle runs at a league high 51% of the time. So I think it's which team can run the ball best. Whoever does that is going to win this game Sunday. Both defenses are susceptible to explosive runs as well. I think that's the key here. I think this is an old school football kind of game.
Do you think Carolina can do enough to get stops against Seattle early on, or how do you see this game kind of playing out?
You know, it's weird because you look at like the metrics last week in Green Bay outgains Seattle by 2 yards per play, 2.9 yards per pass play as well, like in their home building on a short week in a terrible spot. So it's I'm having a tough time gauging Seattle right now. It wasn't an overly impressive performance. They seem to get every call too. We know what Seattle's going to do. They're going to continue to rely on the ground game. They did it efficiently last week, put up 173 yards, 51% of their 35 runs graded successful. That's not how you want to attack the Carolina defense, right? We've talked about this. You want to attack Carolina's defense through the air. Seattle's kind of middling there with their pass game, which is odd, right? You have a great ground game. Defenses should have to put more people in the box, should have to cheat run. You should have a great play action game. You should have an offense that takes deep shots, but you're looking just 5.7 yards per pass attempt the last 3 weeks. Baldwin seems to be getting healthier. He got on track last week, caught his first touchdown pass. Maybe, you know, we'll see him get a little more acclimated into the offense. It'll be a key focal point for Russell Wilson. And I think that'll be the key here. If they can get the pass game going a little bit, that'll go a long way for Seattle.
Should be a good game. Not a lot to get excited about on Sunday, but the Sunday night football game should bring plenty of energy. And we will get to that in a minute, but Payne, this is where I get to put on my Dave Mason hat and then try and rattle off all the housekeeping and business stuff. For the loyal Bet the Board listeners, not all that familiar with betonline.ag, encourage you to go check out promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. All sorts of great promotions just in time for the holidays. If you don't have an account with betonline.ag, use the sign-up code 75BTB on your first ever deposit, and a 75% sportsbook bonus will be added to your bankroll instantly. Already a player at betonline.ag, use the promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% sportsbook bonus just in time to bet all of those overinflated underdogs on a holiday weekend. And Payne, it wouldn't be a Bet the Board podcast if we didn't have some nuggets from behind the counter that I'm trying to pull up over here that Dave was kind enough to send us earlier about how the weekend went. Much like he expected, good day for the house on Saturday and Sunday. Monday night, not quite what the doctor drew up.
No. And that was a good little Dave Mason impersonation. He was nice enough to deliver the info, but it was date night in the old Mason household. Apparently movie night with the lady friend.
Yeah, so, he didn't tell us what movie he was going to see, though. I feel a little disappointed. We may have to get him to like tweet that out when he listens back to the podcast.
It's possible. I don't know if there's the movie selection there isn't very good. So I'm not really sure which movies were available or which ones he went to see. What did we want to talk about here? Do we want to go over what he sent?
Yeah, I was gonna rattle all that off real
quick.
Okay,
so let's do this. Let's do this. So it was a good Saturday. It was a good Sunday. I'm reading his notes now. It was a terrible Monday. So let's do the recap of last weekend and how that went. College football weekend recap. What were the top three winners for the public?
The top three winners for the public. Of course, naturally, I try and pull it up. Nebraska, Boise State, Boise State, Miami, Florida, and the top three winners for the house, Notre Dame, Florida State, it's finally nice that we get to say something positive about your beloved Seminoles, and Memphis.
We're going bowling.
Yeah. Well, we'll see about that, a big game this weekend against the Florida Gators. And for the National Football League, top three winners for the public, Saints, Steelers, and naturally the Monday Night Football over, top three winners for the house, Broncos, Moneyline, Bears, and the Washington Redskins. Anything surprise you from that list?
Broncos, Moneyline. That was a killer of all teasers, so I know that was a good one for the house. No, nothing too shocking there, I don't think. The Monday Night Football over is a little sharp, too. Initially, under took some money when it was going to be played in Mexico. Because we discussed that. It was kind of like a free roll thing. Once it got down to 62.5 Monday afternoon, it took a little sharp over money. But no, that doesn't surprise me.
So and
the game landing three, that was good for them, huh? Or that was
I don't know if that was ideal, but I imagine they didn't want to have to pay out any of that Chiefs money line stuff.
Right. Okay. That helps. That helps. There was 3.5 earlier in the week. All right, let's transition. Yeah. What are we looking at this week? So he came he gave us the top public sides for college football. You want to go those first?
Yeah, we'll do that. Top public sides for college football, and some of these are pretty impressive. 82% of the action on Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl on Thursday. Imagine that's going to hold pretty steady. 68% on the Sooners, a game we talked about in great detail earlier in the podcast. 64% on Michigan. This is going to be the highest bet game, he said, of the weekend, which given the time slot, a little bit odd, but just goes to show the cachet and the fanfare that a marquee matchup creates. 89%. On the Florida Gators against your beloved Noles. And this is the most intriguing nugget of all. 96% on the Fighting Irish, highest bet count of the entire weekend. And Dave said, I'm not paraphrasing here, this could be the biggest college football decision of the year. So USC, if you got anything in the tank to get to the postseason, at least give the bookmakers a fighting chance and try and cover as a 10.5-point dog, a number sure to tick up closer to two scores.
That'd be great. Maybe 14. 14 may get me to the party.
Yeah, NFL. You haven't used that line all season. It's about time you break it out.
It hasn't.
Right around the holidays. NFL-wise, we can rattle these off real quick as well. 77% on the Bears, 71%
make sure,
on the
Saints. I'm reading
the
notes, by the way. I'm reading the notes. Make sure you read all the notes here.
Okay, I can read all of them. Actually, there may be some stuff in here I probably shouldn't read as I go through. NFL, 77% on the Bears, 71% on the Saints, 93% on the Patriots. Fuck, that's Dave Mason. We'll put that in as Dave, since we won't have his Patriots rant. And 78% of the Steelers. He did say there's a little bit of sharp money on the Lions, +3.5, which makes sense. Denver under, Packers under, and the Broncos +3.5. And that is your 5 minutes of sponsor content from Dave Mason, who couldn't be with us because he chose date night instead of the Bet the Board loyal listenership.
It happens. I'm starting to get a little tired. It's 12:21 a.m. This is way past my bedtime.
All right, we got about we can run a quick 2-minute drill on the Sunday night football game then between the Vikings and Packers. Minnesota 3.5-point favorite at BetOnline.ag. Total on this game 47.5. Pain. This is the largest total we've seen in this rivalry since November 23rd, 2014. Call it what we will, a de facto elimination game, two underachieving teams. Packers road woes, but they've lost to good teams in the Seahawks, Patriots, Rams, Lions, Redskins. You can take this game any which direction you like. What is the X factor that will determine who comes out victorious, but more importantly, who covers the number?
You just threw it out there. Packers, obviously, with extra time to prepare. Both teams obviously need this game like blood. It's a tough environment. You can kind of just look at what's gone on in Minnesota under Zimmer with his home field advantage. They're just a covering machine. They almost derailed the hottest team in the league in New Orleans. Had they not fumbled before half going in for a 10-point lead, that really was a massive swing right there. When you look at the game, and I started poking around at these matchups, you can kind of see why this line's starting to trend down a little bit some. If Minnesota and John DeFilippo don't go tempo here, like, he's just absolutely nuts, right? Like, he's got to help this offensive line out. The one aspect of the Packers defense that's very good is they get after the quarterback. They're third in adjusted sack rate. Where the Packers defense is extremely vulnerable is on the ground. And you're just not sure Minnesota can exploit that. Right now, 40% of the Vikings runs great, successful. That's second worst in the NFL. So that's got to change. You need to be more balanced in a game like this. The Green Bay defense is a sieve right now on the ground, and they lose Mike Daniels, who is this elite run stuffer. He's going to be out for the Packers here. If you can't run in this game, it's not a good look. Defensively, I kind of mentioned this quickly at the top of the show. Zimmer is sometimes annoying. The game plan is sometimes annoying. Like, you know, Xavier Rhodes is your best corner. You can't have him playing off like third and fourth wide receivers. Aside from that, his defense is starting to round into form a little bit, especially since the return of Everson Griffin. I was charting that since his return. Like, there's a three-game span here. Minnesota's allowing 4.1 yards per play over that three-game span. And you'll start to look at the metrics. Like, two of the three teams they faced are top 12 in offensive efficiency, and the Saints, number three in that. So it hasn't come against a cupcake schedule, all this improvement. Anthony Barr claims he's returning for this game, so I think that should help as well.
All right, so this game here looks like the general public, I imagine, is going to back the Packers anytime they chance to get Aaron Rodgers. Do we think there's a three if folks are so inclined to try and back the favorite? Do we think 3.5 pretty much a accurate reflection of where this point spread has to be?
I think we're going to see some three in this game at some point. Now, how long it lasts when it gets there, I'm not quite sure. But I think, I think we're going to see some three here. I don't think that would be the spot is good. I feel like for Green Bay, the spot is good. They've had the extra time. Some of the matchup stuff works in their favor. Like, if the Vikings can't run, the Packers are going to get pressure on Kirk Cousins. That's just the reality of the situation. And I think Jair Alexander can kind of remove and wipe out one of those receivers, whether it be Thielen, whether it be Diggs. So the matchups, this is all about if the Vikings can run. If the Vikings can run, their offense is going to be multidimensional, and they're going to have some success. That's just the reality of the situation.
It should be a good game for sure. I mean, see which one of these teams wants to actually have a last gasp in terms of NFC contention.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, suddenly the Lions win on Turkey Day. This game means a whole lot more. Both these teams are going to start feeling like there's some opportunity to be had here. So that'll be interesting. That would be fun to watch if somehow Detroit can win on Turkey Day. This game on Sunday night gets a little more interesting.
All right, eight games down, delivered. Everything our listeners need to know. I was going to say, I'm not sure how people like do it at night. And I know it's 3 hours earlier here on the West Coast, but I'm fading fast. I feel much more comfortable getting up at the crack of dawn to try and hammer this out and bring that energy and that vitality to the podcast. But we do have one final order of business before we send everybody on their safe travels to their Thanksgiving table so they can argue with relatives and want to come back home, you know, Saturday afternoon before they have to gut out the final 24 hours. Where are we going for our single solitary best investment of the holiday weekend, my friend?
Well, Todd, I don't think anyone's going to like this.
You're not going to do what I think you're going to do.
What do you think I'm going to do?
I think we're going to go to a well that we've gone to a couple of times, and
come up dry.
To date, it hasn't paid dividends for us, but maybe third time's a charm.
It's come up a little dry. That is for sure. I am hoping my boy Jimbo has a sound game plan this week against his former LSU Tigers. Let's go with Texas A&M minus the points against LSU. Saturday night at home, Kyle Field, rowdy environment.
They are not rolling out the red carpet for us anytime soon if we elect to bring Bet the Board on the road, Baton Rouge style.
You are correct. I don't know if I would go there, but yeah, let's go with A&M.
Pretty sure you'd go. If somebody rolled out the red carpet and said, "Hey, Payne, we want to bring you down here. We want to have you for LSU, Alabama. You can take part in the tailgate festivities." You bet your bottom dollar you would be down. Don't give me that bullshit.
Maybe. We're going with A&M. Let's do it.
All right. Texas A&M, your bet the board, best bet, -3. Kellen Mond, take us to the promised land. Let's hope that Aggie secondary is shored up against Joe Burrow. The one thing we have going for us, Payne, is a good run defense. So if we're going to lose to Joe Burrow, he's going to have to do it with his arm. He's not going to be able to hand the ball off to LSU stable of running backs.
That's what I was thinking. And they can get after the quarterback a little bit as well. So that'll be the key. The key in this game is obviously keeping Mond upright a little bit. The offensive line for A&M hasn't been great in pass protection. So if he can get a couple seconds, we should be good there. And if we can limit Joe Burrow, and I say that laughingly, I shouldn't. If we can limit Joe Burrow through the air, we should be good.
All right, let's hope that the Aggies can finally break through of the shackles that have been their rivalry with LSU since joining the SEC. Don't believe they've beaten them, so there's a first for everything. It's coming Saturday at Kyle Field. the Aggies are your best bet. All right, finally, Payne, before we close up shop on yet another festive holiday podcast around these parts, you know, what is going to be the drink of choice this weekend for you when you spend some quality time with the loved ones?
I think I'm going White Russian this weekend. I think that's the...
That's an aggressive move. I can't do the heavy cream. I'm more of a Black Russian guy. I can't do the heavy cream. It doesn't exactly sit real well.
Oh, I'm aware. Usually we change it up. I've been on this kick. I've been on the Tito's Club Soda Splash of Sprite. That's kind of been the go-to. So I'll probably have a couple of those. But I've been out of the drinking game, so it's probably like a 2-3 drink day at this point, which is pretty weak. But that's what I'm thinking. Probably rotate between the White Russians and the Club Soda Splash of Sprite.
They all right.
What are you doing, by the way? Figure it out. When are you hitting the road?
You know, the podcast, we're going to wrap this thing up. We send it off for post-production and all that stuff to make it sound like we know what we're talking about. About 4 hours from now, I'll be hitting the highway and shooting the television program from down in the lovely Phoenix area before spending some quality time with the family. Some festivities planned Wednesday night, little Thursday. I don't even think my mom's hosting. I'm not quite sure of the details. It's a little wrench thrown in the plans. And get to see the sister, the brother-in-law, mom, dad, girlfriend making the trip. Everybody's going to be together for it.
Big old happy family. So you usually bring just a slew of disgusting snacks for the road. We're doing that again?
Oh, I mean, I'm not sure. 4 a.m., I'm not sure if I can break out my patented Sour Patch Kids, dill pickle, sunflower seeds, a little 4-Hour Energy, a little Red Bull. I mean, may have to mix it up. I'm not sure what kind of overload my body can take at that kind of
witching
hour.
Are you going to bed after this?
I'm going to get probably about 3 hours of sleep, thereabouts, maybe a little bit longer. Still have to pack. Make sure the dog has everything she needs for the trip. I mean, it's no small undertaking. Let's not kid ourselves.
Full family these days.
You know, that's how you got to roll, buddy. Someday you'll get to that point, too. Says the guy babysitting two small dogs under the, what are they, under 5 pounds?
Yeah, like under 20 pounds. That's soon coming. And not quite in the works yet, but that is, it's approaching, unfortunately.
All right, we'll get a little rant on that, but a little bit of flavor, peeling back the curtain for our loyal listeners, as we encourage all of you guys to do. We know how big a drinking night Wednesday is. Be smart, be safe. Uber, get a designated driver, especially for all the younger listeners out there coming home, getting a chance to see their buddies. Cherish it while you can, because when you get to be our age, it doesn't happen quite as frequently.
No, I don't think I'll be going out tomorrow night. I don't think I have it in me.
Yeah, I don't think... I figured this podcast is going to take it all out of you. So follow our team of Bet the Board experts. You can follow Dusty at Dusty Dvorak, who didn't join us for the holiday preview. He'll be back for championship weekend. Dave Mason gets a week off for good behavior. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne at Payne Insider. And I'm, of course, Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Any final words before we officially close up shop this Thanksgiving week?
That's everything. Let's go Aggies. Let's go Jimbo Fisher. Should have asked you this already. What are you going with? What's your favorite side? I have a feeling you're a weirdo.
No, well, you know what? They asked us the question on a TV show, and I've always been like that. You know, I'm not going to go with the flow type guy. And so I said cream spinach, not really thinking, and I probably had it like one Thanksgiving. My mom watched the show, called me probably about a couple hours later on DVR, goes, I've never had cream spinach on my table once. I don't know where you've spent the holiday. So if I had to go through, I mean, I'm a traditional guy when it comes to holidays. You know, give me a little stuffing.
Ugh.
The turkey for me doesn't bother me like everybody else. And, you know, desserts, I like to mix it up. I'm not a traditionalist with the pumpkin pie or the pecan pie. So homemade desserts, second to none. But, you know, Thanksgiving for me doesn't always follow the staples. We get a few curveballs thrown our way every year.
I'm just a basic guy. So. Mashed potatoes, that's good. But I like your pie choice. I'm more of like an out there guy too. A little Oreo pie is my speed.
Yeah, like Oreo pie. See, I'm more of like a banana cream, coconut cream. It's not really Thanksgiving, so like strawberry rhubarb when it gets thrown into the mix. I'll take that. But shit, we could go
all right,
on for hours. And I'm going to pack. We're going to get out of here. Go drink your White Russians. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Appreciate everything you guys do as our loyal listeners. 5-star reviews at iTunes. Special thanks to the winner here. Remember, if you haven't entered that review, you'll be eligible for the next contest. Best of luck this weekend with all of your Thanksgiving investments. And come, what is it, Saturday night at about 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern, we'll see you at the window.